Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Real treat today. Emmett Snead is in with us, and we're going to talk about Emmett's book, Yankees in the Cornfield. Emmett, good to have you here. You were here a couple weeks ago when we talked about the food co-op, and we'll talk a little bit about you involved with your farm and all, but we're mainly going to talk about a book you wrote. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
The book Yankees in the Cornfield, I know you've described it as it's historical fiction.
Yes, sir.
How did before we get into the book and start talking about a lot of things with it, was how did this all come about?
Well, I had three children and they we got married late and so they're a lot younger than my wife and I, and they didn't seem to understand, you know, where I came from and all that kind of thing. You know, you had kids are always like they had, you know, before they were born, the parents didn't really have a life and didn't really know anything.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I'll write a manuscript about how it was growing up on a farm back in the day near a city and, you know, and kind of, you know, have characters in it, you know, based on real people. Like, you know, it's not really based on a single person. Like, a character would be based on five or six interesting aspects of one person, and you put it all into one, and it makes it, you know, more readable. So they didn't really like it. They were shocked by it, and they thought the 1960s was, you know, racist and those kind of things. And so I felt like I was a reporter. I wasn't really trying to inject an opinion in the story. I just try to be like a reporter that didn't have an opinion and that want to report things the way they were and how far we've come and how to improve on things by learning from mistakes of the past. So then I had a party with some college friends, and one of my daughters was laughing about the manuscript to my friend, and he asked me about reading it. So
yeah.
I let him, and then he called me back like 3 days later and says, you know, this is really good. He said, if you edited this thing, it would be a good book to publish. I thought he was joking because he's a kind of a kidder. And anyway, that's kind of how it went.
Well, it's I said to you earlier, I know people that have done this kind of thing, have tried to tell their life story or talked about where they grew up, and it doesn't flow like this. This book, it has a pretty dramatic opening and has a pretty dramatic close, but in between the stories are just I didn't grow up on a farm, but I grew up in rural Michigan with all kinds of friends who had farms, and it brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah, when I wrote it, I've become aware since then that hardly anyone grew up on a farm. So I wrote it from the perspective, like I said, of a reporter, like I was reporting how the farm worked to someone who didn't really know about it. You know, so I was in such a way that it would be interesting to the non-farming person. And the farming is mainly a backstop or a backstory to what's really going on. So you kind of throw that in with it, and then I thought it would make it more interesting if these things were taking place on a farm, as it were.
Well, the thing that comes out when you read this, and the thing that I remembered was, because I remember in the summers, not growing up on a farm, I'd want to go play with my friends, and they rarely could play because they were out in the field or doing something. Never went on vacations, and this shows you just farming life is a difficult, it's a hard life.
Yeah, but see, people who haven't lived it don't know that. And they're, what you can do is, and I do it even today and since then, in the middle of my life, all my life, you let people come work on your farm for the novelty of it. And they think it's fun, see, because they, you know, you try to make it fun for them.
Oh, I went and baled hay several times. And I look back, it was really hard work.
Yeah.
But I thought it was to be on the back on a wagon and dealing
yeah.
with.
And my dad was really good at, you know, not making it fun so much, but he would, you know, say, well, this is a problem over here. You need to be paying attention to so you don't get hurt or whatever. And then meanwhile, you're working and you're, it takes your mind off mm-hmm. the monotony of the work. So when I had friends over, we'd try to make a game out of it, you know, like who could win first, or like finish first, or, you know, how fast could you go, and how strong were you, and who's the biggest man, you know, and that kind of thing. So it was fun to do it that way.
I laughed with this, the story of Emmett Smith is the person who's the
Everett
Smith. Everett Emmett. I'm thinking of football. Okay. Everett Smith is
all right.
is the person in
Emmett
in the
Smith
book.
Made more money than Emmett or Everett Smith.
But Everett can carry what is it, about 100 pounds of milk.
You know, I never weighed it, but I'm sure it's that much, yes.
Yeah, and some of his friends over, these athletes, they can't.
No. And a lot of it has to do with conditioning and also technique. You know, it's like playing a sport. You know, it's not only how strong you are, but whether you practice at it, whether you're conditioned at it, and the technique that you use, the finesse of it.
People that write books like this always tell me that it's a lot more time-consuming and a lot harder than they ever imagined. Did you find that?
The editing of it was a shocker. Writing it, it just I would think about something I wanted to write. It may be a day, it may even be a week when I was working, like driving the tractor or something boring that I'm doing, farming. And then one morning I'd wake up. I usually wake up around 4 o'clock, give or take an hour or two, because that's what I did all my life, milking cows for 20 years. And I'd wake up and it'd all be in my mind, and I'd sit down at a desk and it would just flow out. And you know, by the time people were coming to work that morning, I'd already be finished. So, you know, but then editing it is tricky. I mean, you got to make it so that not just the chapter flows, but the whole book flows.
Yeah.
And then at some point in that book, it needs to have, I don't know how to describe it, the word I would use, like a rhythm to it. So that you when you finish one chapter, you're going, oh my God, I want to get to the next chapter. We'll see what happened, you know, and it feels like it has a feel to it. And then you have to write it in such a way that you can, that you can smell it, that you can taste it, that, you know, that you feel like you're right there in what's going on. And that's kind of tricky. But, you know, if you have a good vocabulary, it's fun to write in a way, because you can put down exactly what it is you want to do, and you can go back and change it before you publish it or whatever. Whereas when you're talking to people, sometimes you say something maybe you wish you hadn't said, but once you say it, it's done.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's why writing, I enjoy writing because of that.
Do you think you'll write any more?
Well, I thought I would, and I've started another one, but it would be a real different book. I mean, not real different, but a different. It would be later on, and I'm thinking about, you know, doing it in, maybe based in Richmond, Virginia. But then as I'm writing it, it looks like to me this one becomes more popular. It's been a real surprise to me. I'm afraid that it might be a hard act to follow. It may not be as good as this one. So then I'd feel funny.
It's called Yankees in the Cornfield. You can get it on Amazon, can't you?
Yes, sir.
And any other places? Is there other places around here?
Roxbury Mills carries it. Brayhead Farm carries it. The bookstore, Riverview Bookstore, down next to Sammy T's, carries it. And I think those are the three that I know of.
Well, it's a great read. I was able to read it in about three nights just before I'd go to bed. It really does flow, and you do. All the next day, I kept thinking, I can't wait to see what happens next.
Did it give you nightmares?
No, never. That's what it was. It's a great read, and in fact, I told you I've signed up for the adult reading challenge with the library, and this is the first book I'm putting in there that I read, Yankees in the Cornfield.
I'm extremely flattered.
Emmett Snead here this morning. Yankees in the Cornfield is the book. We're going to talk about some of the different stories and just a lot of good life lessons in this book that we will talk about when we come back. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Emmett Snead with us this morning. We're talking about his book, Yankees in the Cornfield, and you can get it again on Amazon. You can get it around here at his farm. You can get it at mentioned Roxbury, a number of places. We'll go through that again before Emmett gets out of here. The name Yankees in the Cornfield, how'd you come up with that?
Well, when I first wrote the manuscript for my kids, that chapter wasn't in there.
That is a fascinating chapter, by the way.
That's the only one that's Well, I could say it's true. I wasn't there, but it's stories basically that are handed down both sides of the family. And so my children railed so mad about how bad the 1960s were. I said, man, I'm going to give them a little lesson. I'm going to write a chapter about the 1860s.
The 1860s weren't all that good around here.
See how much changed since then, between that time and 1960s. So I did that, and I made them read it, and then they were even more horrified. They said, oh, my God, these people, they fought against the government, and they owned slaves, and you know, they were like this, and they were like that. And I said, well, oh, by the way, those are your great-great-great-grandparents. You can Google their names, and you'll find out about it. And they were shocked, but it was, you know. So then my friends read the book. The original title was My Favorite Ex-Con, the manuscript. So when I changed it to book form and edited it, everybody I knew that read it, that was a friend of mine, said change it to Yankees in the Cornfield. So I did.
Well, as I read it, because there's a lot of history. You put some Civil War history and just some tactical things in there. Because I wondered if you've ever talked about that with like anybody, if anybody from the Park Service has ever talked to you about that.
Because hardly.
it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting stuff.
They already know all the stuff about that, I think. I mean, I just hear stuff around the edges from people that, you know, they're descendants of people who lived here then, or I've read stuff myself. But I mean, they know all about these park people. They know all the stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting part of the book, just that, because I kept reading it as I'm going through the book. It's about halfway through and when that chapter comes up, and I kept thinking, where's the name coming from?
And people think the whole book is about the War of Northern Aggression. But it's not. It's just basically that one chapter, and that was just kind of stuck in there. But it fits in, I think. I had to work on it a little bit to make that flow with the rest of it. But the hardest part about the book, it was easy to write it, relatively speaking. But the editing, it took me only 2 winters. A winter is 3 months to write it, you know, part time, and then to edit it, it took a year. Every morning waking up around 4, and doing about 20 minutes to an hour on it.
Yeah.
I probably rewrote it 5 times, you know, so it was a lot to it, I mean, on that end of it. I thought I'd hire somebody to edit it, but I let them do 2 chapters, and they were trying to make it more sterile, too sterile. You know, it lost its flavor, I thought.
It definitely has a flavor, and I'm sure I've seen
and
where...
It lost its color and flavor.
Well,
because I wanted to write in such a way that you feel like you're there.
I was going to say.
Like you can taste it. You can smell it. You know, you're like right there in the minute of when it's going on.
In our society today, sometimes we try to avoid some things, and you don't do that.
It's unvarnished.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
It's unvarnished. Yes, sir.
and you don't often see that.
No, and that's the way, you know, I think that it's just the way it was and the way it was reported, like a reporter, like I said. I'm not trying to gloss it over. I'm not trying to make it look bad or worse even, or nothing, just straight down the middle of the line, as it were.
Well, Emmett, the other thing I like about it is I didn't grow up here, but as I read this, always in the back of my mind is – This is the Fredericksburg area before the mall and before Route
Yes.
3 was Route 3 and
before
the, you know, the bridge to nowhere and all of that. And to try to imagine it, because I'm always fascinated to look at old black and white pictures from this, you know, back in this time. And it really does take you back. Whether you grew up here or not, this does touch you, but it also, you look at this area in a little bit different way.
Yeah, it could apply to talking to people that have read it, and I've been so surprised and taken back, especially by people from up north. They love the book, and it's like if you're in our age group, you know, it's like anywhere U.S., any town, any small town USA is kind of what it reflects. Not just of course it is a southern town, but
yeah.
People up north, it's like it was. They tell me, I said, "What do you like about the book?" They said, "Well, it's like a starting point. Your memories are like a starting point for my memories that I've completely forgotten. And it's like going down memory lane, and it's just like, you know, you feel like you're there and you were there, you know, somewhere in America. It's like an American town. It's
yeah.
Just a southern town.
Yeah. So I guess.
And also, it's like not all people are bad. You know, there's not all Yankees are bad, obviously, and not all Southerners are bad, and you know, and there's a lot of good people from all stations of life, and that's what the book portrays, I think.
So I guess I guess some of it is, some of it happened, some of it you used creative license, and so there's.
Creative license is a good word.
There's some truth. There's some truth in it, and there's some that you made the story flow.
Yeah, you know, you take a character like in Lord of the Rings, it's my favorite book to read. But they had so many characters in it, you kind of lose track of it. So I'm thinking they could have taken like five or six of these characters, or maybe even 10 of them in that book.
Yeah,
made them into one really interesting character. So that's what I try to do here. I try to take, you know, a bunch of my friends and make them into one friend. You know, Frankie, and then I tried to, but I put a little of myself in each one of them too.
Okay.
Know? And even people that are of a different race, I even put myself into them, and vice versa. And it really makes it much more interesting. You know, it's more exciting to see something, to read something that's exciting than something that's mundane.
Have any of your friends who live some of this with you said, "Hey, I remember that"?
All of them, and even people I disguised in there. I thought I disguised them. I have a lot of people come and say, "I know who that person was. It's so and so," and you know, and it's not 100% that person, but it might be, you know, 30% that person, or 50%, or you know. But they recognize that aspect of that person's personality in that character, and that has really surprised me. And even people who were older than me that have read it, my mother's generation, they recognize the people in there that, you know, that they do. Because we were kids, and of course they were parents, and I guess they remember stuff too.
You mentioned, at least the ones that off the top of my head, I know you mentioned Roxbury, Fredericksburg Hardware, and Carl's. Mm-hmm. Those were some of the businesses that, you know, that I recognized from around here.
Hot Shops, Hardy's.
Oh, Hot Shops, that's right. When I saw Hot Shops, that, because that in the early 80s was still around when I came here.
Go to Washington College.
Mm-hmm. And that's again,
that used to be a road that went through the middle of it that everybody drove through.
Yeah.
But of course, now that's no more.
there are parts of this that, like I say, they do take you back in this area.
Yes, sir.
That's a lot of fun. That had to be fun. Just writing it and reliving some of the geographic memories of those kind of things.
Well, it was
Hot
it was,
Shops was just
I,
a
I, you know at the very it was like at the very least it was fun for me to do. Even if I never made a book, like I said, I was just doing it to make a manuscript, and it was very therapeutic for me writing it. You know, it was like, you know, this happened, that happened, and I moved on, and you know, and these things have changed, and everything's for the better.
See, you mentioned one of your daughters made fun of it, because as I read, as we were talking about that, I thought if I wrote something like this, because I do really relate to a lot of this, my kids would never understand it. Especially you talk about being in Minnesota, and at some relatives in Minnesota, and you got an hour of TV in, and you can listen to music for an hour, and it was more than you could ever listen to if you were back home. And I thought, my kids couldn't relate to that.
My aunt moved up there, and she was raising her family there, and when I got there, she laid down all these rules and regulations, like, you know, she was really strict, and of course I'm keeping a straight face and laughing at her.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is a cakewalk for me, you know, I mean, this is a joke. But it was fun to go up there and see how the city people lived, and I was quite blown away by it. You know, it was but it was good. I mean, I enjoyed it's parts of it I really like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was glad to get home again.
So have your kids come to appreciate this book at this point, do you think?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. We don't talk about it much. I think they're just taken back by it, by the success of it. And I think initially they might have been embarrassed by it. You know how kids are. And then I think,
sure,
I'm really good at embarrassing my daughters. In fact, I feel like it's, you know, an important thing, a mission in my life. So, but now I think they're surprised at how people. And they're not any more surprised than I am. I'm really surprised.
I'm really late getting, because I didn't find out about this about 6 weeks ago. You came in, as we mentioned at the beginning, and as you were leaving, you told me about that. You know, you had written a book, and I'm a year late on this. It was about a year ago that this came out.
Yes, sir. About a year in February, I think. Somewhere along in there, maybe January. Yeah, about a year ago.
Okay.
I wasn't really thinking. Yes, that's correct.
Yankees in the Cornfield. Emmett Snead is the author. Again, where can we get it at besides Amazon?
Roxbury Mills, Brayhead Farm, and Riverbee Bookstore.
Okay, it is a great read. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the I guess these were your dad's sayings that you sprinkle throughout the book.
Yes. And sprinkle, that's a good word.
They season.
I use his sayings to season the book by sprinkling salt.
They come up at all different times.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's perfect.
You sit and you look at that, and a lot of them I would sit there and read it a couple of times and just think, that's good for life. It was good back then, and it's good today.
You had classic sayings that still apply.
We're going to get into that when we come back. Emmett Snead is here. The book is Yankees in the Cornfield. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Town Talk, financed by Deacon Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's now 8:29.
Okay, listen. We got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deacon Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff this morning. We are honored to have Emmett Snead in here with his book, Yankees in the Cornfield. Before we get back to the book, when you're not writing books and coming on the radio to talk about books, you're hanging out at Snead's Asparagus Farm. When do things, what, is April, May, things will start picking up for you?
Yeah, we start selling asparagus at the carport around the middle to the end of April, depending on whether it's early spring or late spring. And then throughout the month of May. Then around the end of June, July, we open the roadside stand with the summertime vegetables.
Did the cold weather we've had, is that gonna affect you? Does that affect you in any way, or is that just what you expect?
I always expect the weather to keep, to thin out the competition, as it were.
Speaking of the weather, one of the things, one of my favorite chapters was when you talk about a blizzard in 1968 in this book, and it to me really symbolized just the hard life of a farmer, because if the workers can't get there, or no matter what, things have to be, when you have cattle, when you've got cows, you've got to do certain things every day.
You got to be milked twice a day
and
fed all day.
And so
they're big animals, and they get hungry and thirsty.
It really did show that good weather or bad weather.
People don't really have any clue of how demanding that is. That's why, being a fruit and vegetable farmer and Christmas tree and pumpkin farmer, seems like I'm on vacation now. Compared to having a dairy farm.
So after growing up with that, do you think that that's what kind of maybe led you to look at another area of farming?
Actually, I didn't mind the work. I like working. What I didn't like about dairy farming was there was very little profit in it. If you did that much work, it just seemed to me it should be more profit. Whereas, vegetable and grain farming, you don't really work. You do the seasons. You work seasons, and that way it's not monotonous, and it's always different, and it's always challenging, but in a different way. It's probably more mentally challenging, whereas dairy farming is mainly just a routine you get into, and it's not to be not that's not saying that it's not hard to do mentally. It's just a very different way of farming. It's kind of like going to a factory to work every day.
Okay. Yeah.
Whereas vegetable farming and grain or fruit and Christmas trees, those kinds of things, you just go with the season. Every season's different, and you got X amount of time to get it done, and you need to be ahead of the game, or next thing you know, you're behind. And that's what most people do. They get behind, and then start to snowball them, then they get depressed and they give up.
And I guess with vegetable farming and all, you're concerned with the weather, and you're watching that all the time too.
All the time. Mm-hmm. You don't see the weather as your enemy like some people do. You just see it as that's just the way it is, and you deal with it.
Yeah, how are we going to work around
it? Yeah, and how can you work it to your advantage too? I love to be a person that figures out how to make lemonade. You know,
I can see that. I can.
And then when you make lemonade, you have that to sell. You know, no one else has it, and then you know you get rewarded that way.
Evan Steed with us this morning. The book is Yankees in the Cornfield. When you mentioned hard work, I thought of the – there are a number of sayings through this book that really add another element to this book. And I guess these were sayings of your dad's?
Yes, and I regret that growing up I didn't write everything down he said because I can't – he's had so many sayings. I mean, he had hundreds of sayings, and he had a memory of that kind of thing and a fort from way back hundreds of years, I think. And I can still remember some of the things he says. If that situation, a like situation comes up, then that saying will pop back into my head. So I started writing things down. That's how I did this book. I would write sayings down in the course of a year on one piece of paper, and then I'd go back and try to fit them into the storyline. And there was such, you know, at the time, I thought, you know, that's what everybody did. They had sayings, but no one does. So then I realized when I did that people in my mother's generation that knew my dad, they see it. A lot of people thought he was an interesting and colorful person. So I put all his sayings in italics throughout the book. So a person can actually go through and just read the italics if they just want to read, see my father's perspective of things. And there's a lot of people, believe it or not, like that. So I'm really glad I did that.
It is. It pops right up. In my case, I underlined a lot of things. The first one, speaking of hard work, hard work's not easy. Dry bread's not greasy.
Yeah.
So describe that, because you said that goes back to the Depression.
Yeah, and somebody reading that, that's not English. That's not correct grammar. You know, it's a double negative. Well, it was meant to be a negative.
Yeah.
Because back during the Depression, people who had jobs, it was hard to even get a job, even if you wanted to work. And if you got a job, then you could afford grease on your bread. And if you're in a bread line or a soup line, you just had dry bread. Of course, now grease is bad because it has cholesterol. But if you're working physically hard all day long, you need that. Mm-hmm. Your body needs that to make it calorically. So people who worked hard, they had grease. And it could be chicken fat. It could be hog fat. It could be butter. It could be any form of grease, you know, to put on your bread. And that was, you know, you put it on there and you sopped it up, you know, the gravy up with it or whatever was left in the frying pan, and you were glad to get it. And that's how the saying started. Hard work's not easy, of course, but dry bread's not greasy.
Yeah. I looked at it, and I had to read it a couple of times, and as I read through the book when...
And, of course, as a kid, I didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Every time I would complain, I associated that saying with complaining about, you know, as a kid, you're milking cows when you're, you know, 5 or 6 years old and washing cow bags, and you're going, well, that's hard. That's hard work's not easy, dry bread's not greasy, you know. Another way of saying it nowadays would be, buck up, sissy pants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And one day I figured out that's what he was saying, but it took a while.
Another one was always feed your animals before you feed yourself. I guess you mentioned about cows and all that you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah. So if you're running a farm like my dad was, and you got a bunch of workers and kids, you know, your children, even your own children, and that inspires people to get the work done, you know, because you get the work done, then you get to eat, you know, because I was always ready to get the work done because I was always ready to eat all the time.
Another one, always take care of your animals before you take care of yourself, and they will take care of you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Again, same kind of thing.
That's where your money or your income or your livelihood came from, was directly from the animals. Not only the animal products, whatever they would be, but also the byproduct of animals, manure, was extremely important, you know, for not just for fertilizer, but for the tilth of the soil and the organic component of the soil. All that was really, really important.
Some of that. There are parts of this book that I'm sure the people that aren't from farms or might have been, you know, quote-unquote city kids, you just can't understand. You can't relate to it, which is too bad.
I think you can't. I think I try to write it so that it's like farming, you know, dumbed down.
Yes.
I think so. I think most people... And I even demonstrated that I knew a lot of people didn't understand basketball or how you other than just shooting the ball or making a shot or getting a rebound, they don't understand the finesse involved and, you know, transition from defense to offense and what you do and how you do it. So I did that. I wrote a chapter on basketball and used farming synonyms to explain it. And several people have told me that they really enjoyed that chapter because they didn't really, women mostly, they didn't really understand basketball, women my age, and now they do, so they say. So, you know, I thought that was fun to do.
You have a chapter on poaching and some poachers, which was something that I hadn't even thought about for years. But when you've got a lot of you've got a lot of land and things like that, that's an issue.
Yeah, when people own property, farms especially, it's very disturbing when you realize, especially growing up as a kid, that there are people who don't respect your property. And you know, and that's just, that was a real surprise because you're raised to respect other people's property. So you think, well, they'll respect, if I respect their property, they'll respect mine. But that's not necessarily the case. So, you know, it's a surprise to learn that. So I thought, you know, from a kid's perspective, learning that the first time would be an interesting angle to write about.
You said that you're before you named it Yankees in the Cornfield, you were going to name it My Favorite Ex-Con, and you've got that's a chapter in here.
Yes. During the 60s, it's kind of like it is now, there was really low unemployment. So and back then, the hardest job around would be to work on a farm. So my dad had a problem getting workers, you know, men, and to work on the farm. So usually he had people who weren't dependable, that were, you know, drunks or druggers or whatever they were. They would come when they came, and it was better than nothing. But then his goal was to always have one man there all the time because he had me to work and he had his father, his grandfather, besides us, you know. So he went down to the state farm penitentiary and they would have men in there that could get out, you know, after serving the amount of time. If they were on good behavior, they could get out on parole. But they had to have a job waiting for them. So he knew the warden really well, and the warden would size the guys up that, you know, he thought would be a good fit with my dad, and then they would, you know, he had a house there they lived in, and they had a garden, and they had chickens and the whole nine yards, and he took care of them, and they had a paycheck. So, but then, you know, as soon as their parole ended, that was it. I mean, they'd go back to, nobody wanted to go back to jail, so they were excellent workers.
Yeah.
And then generally, once the parole ended, they wanted to find an easier job or an easier way to live. So then he had to get another ex-con. So a lot of the ex-cons he got, some of them were pretty bad. Well, they weren't bad to me, but they had been murderers or whatever. And my favorite one happened to be a murderer. And I thought he was the nicest guy ever.
Huh.
He and I became really close friends. And I couldn't understand why he was a murderer and why he did all that. My dad explained, well, he gets to drinking. My dad didn't allow drinking or smoking on the farm. He's like a different person. It changes his personality. So that was kind of an interesting insight.
Yeah.
I was quite shocked by it all, but he was great. I mean, he was fun to work with.
I mean, are there any chapters or parts of this book that were your favorites that really brought back memories?
I think the one, Springtime in the Rappahannock River Valley is probably my favorite one. Fishing on the Rappahannock and cutting silage, where I work with my favorite ex-con. His name is Leslie.
Yeah.
And others. And I enjoy watching people. Like when I go up to the farmer's market for a long time and observe. I love observing people when they don't know they're being observed. And I try to do it in a way that they don't know I'm staring at them or anything. And that's how I can write that book. Because I try to look at somebody and I describe their personality, you know, by their facial features and how they, what they say and their mannerisms. So it's, to me, that's really interesting to do. And I've been doing it all my life, but I didn't know I'd ever write about it. But that comes into play in this book where I go back, because I've observed a lot of people. To me, people are really interesting and everybody is really different. Everybody is very different. It's just like even domesticated animals like chickens, people think, well, it's a flock of chickens, they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Every chicken in that flock is an individual, has a different personality. And, you know, it's like a dog. If you had dogs, like people understand this because they have pet dogs, every dog is different. Well, every animal is different. And every person, especially, of course, they are different too. So it makes life really interesting to observe that, to me at least.
There's a building on the cover of the book.
My mother painted that painting. That's why the book's selling so well, because she gave me her painting. And that book, that particular building is an old granary from the 30s that my grandfather built. He built
okay.
that, he built that himself. And that's, that was a big shot granary back in the day. Now it's just a joke. But
so it's still standing?
Yes. It's at Brayhead Farm. And
oh, okay.
It's been incorporated into what they do there.
Okay. The I guess the other thing I liked is because I always liked the Waltons. And I thought, in a way, this is a little bit later, but this is sort of the Waltons in Fredericksburg.
Maybe.
Maybe you stretch it a little bit, but...
Yeah, I guess, yeah, there'd be a lot of similarities with family and hard work. And,
yeah,
you know, the basic principles of, you know, how people lived back then, yes. Yeah, I guess so. The Waltons were more, they were more in the mountains and kind of not near a city.
Right.
Whereas I was blessed with the fact that I happened to live on a farm in the city eventually, or next to the city at the time. So I got the best of both worlds, which was really fortunate for me, because then I, you know, had, you know, you have a more of an understanding of how the whole world really works.
Another one of the sayings is if a child is given everything, he won't appreciate what has been given to him.
Correct.
And again, you look at that and you say,
yeah,
you see that.
Well, all these friends of mine have BB guns and TVs and all this stuff.
You know? Now, if this book is to be believed, you got your gun early, though. You got it. You were supposed to get it when you were 13.
Yeah, BB guns. I had a real gun.
You did, yeah. When you were 10.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of varmints around, and you had to protect your animals.
When you were growing up, did you ever think, you know, some of my friends have it way easier than I do?
Oh, yeah. At the time, but looking back on it, though, I'm the one that got the best deal there.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
I thought, yeah, they have it easy. I have to do all this stuff. I, you know, can't play sports. I can't do this. And, you know, so. But looking back, I'm thankful for the way I was raised.
Yankees in the Cornfield. Emmett Snead is the author of that book. We'll talk about, when we come back, we'll talk about where you can get it and wrap this up with Emmett. Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. We'll be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Shubin.
Emmett Snead with us this morning of Snead's Asparagus Farm. Yankees in the Cornfield is the book that came out about a year ago. And there's a website that you can find out more about the book. You can find more about the farm and a lot of other things, Emmett.
Correct. It's www.sneedsfarm.com.
Sneedsfarm.com will give you all that information. And you've got, I guess this is...
It has a link there to the Fredericksburg Co-op, information about that, and also information about joining my CSA and other things that we do on the farm.
Well, CSAs have gotten to be a big thing around here, around the country, and it's a great way to get fresh vegetables throughout the summer and spring, fall months.
Yes, I think it's... we do it spring, summer, and fall. But we don't do it during the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's and you know, if you have fresh picked asparagus right of the field or vine ripened tomatoes, those kinds of things are gateway drugs for carnivores to kind of change up things and get more of a balanced diet.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's your
such as myself.
CSAs are really, I mean, they've it's just been in recent years that I've seen them around. I guess they've been around for a while, but it's a great idea.
Yeah, I think it fits right into what I'm doing. I mean, it's like a glove. I mean, it's great. You know, I used to worry about what to do with extra produce and, you know, whether a chain store would give me 2 cents for it or what.
Yeah.
And now I can at least give all the extra produce I have and always have extra to people who at least gave me some money up front and who actually like me.
Sneedsfarm.com is the website to go to, and you'll find information there also about the book Yankees in the Cornfield. You mentioned earlier about women liking this book. Yeah, it really isn't just a book for men.
Yeah, the book has been one surprise after another for me because it's written about boys growing up in the 60s, but most of the people, the fans, I guess if you want to call them that, people that seem to like it the most that talk to me or call me or see me are mostly women. And I asked my mother about that, and she said that the book is, for the time it was written, for the 60s, it's very, very female-friendly as far as, you know, you know, doing the right things. And I'm really glad of that, because that's kind of the way I feel about it anyway. So I guess it kind of carried over into my writing.
Well, as I have read it, I've told several people you ought to get this book and read it, because it really is. It's a fast read, and it does give you a glimpse of just not only this area, but that time in the 60s.
Yes. Historical fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you did a great job of it, and you know, I hope you do. I hope you do spend some time, and maybe a few years from now we do this again talking about your next book.
Well, that's very flattering. Thank you.
Again, SneedsFarm.com is the website that gives you information. Yankees in the Cornfield, available on Amazon and other places around town.
Yeah, Riverbee's been selling a lot of books down there. They told me that it's done really well, according to them. That surprised me too. So there's a lot of places to get it: Riverbee bookstores, Roxbury Mills, and Brayhead Farm.
It doesn't take, it's only just a little over 100 pages.
Yes, it's a fast read. It's the chapters, like I said, Lord of the Rings is what I like. So I decided to write a book the way I would like to read it, which is short chapters, but each sentence would have meat in it, so that every sentence is interesting. In fact, you need to read them over usually, the book, the chapters, to really understand it, because there's a lot going on. There's some double entendres, a lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff, and as I always try to add humor to it.
Well, you succeeded. It's a great book, and it really documents around here, and it's fun. It's not a.
You're really making me look good.
Emmett Snead, Yankees in the Cornfield. Get it. You'll be glad you did. SneedsFarm.com. We'll give you information on the farm, and also the book and other things. Emmett, thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.